the pace of transformation, we've also taken that into account, Chair. But we, in taking that into account, we've also juxtaposed the needs of this, if we call this a new profession, so to speak, the needs of this new profession, the dependencies, and if I say dependencies, I don't mean one depends on the other, but I mean the interaction between the two professions, as it were, the legal profession and the new profession that we call paralegal. So this whole work, when we talk about research, and I know that when we say we are going to research this point, sometimes people think that it's our excuse to not put stuff on the table and hide behind research, but we just want to clarify certain things for ourselves. If the Honourable House agrees, I'd like to give it at that. We want to come up with a concept paper. The data there, Chairperson, and you can hold her and myself to account for it in case it doesn't come to the table.
Before you proceed, let me agree that you are right to say we wanted a plan so that we know on what basis you are working and where you are going. But I'm also happy that you recall this issue about the Land Claims Court. Our understanding is that prior to 1994, the EU and other donors made money available to civil society to fight apartheid. But after 1994, Honorable Mandela made sure that that money comes to civil society through government. And government established the Foundation for Human Rights as an implementing agent of government. And as this committee, we oversee government, and in particular the department, including your implementing agents. So we don't expect the implementing agent to be so autonomous that they decide their own mandate and how they execute it, and that they also prioritize. For instance, as the minister correctly pointed out yesterday, our problem now is poverty, the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequalities. And the president has correctly said, you know, land disposition is actually the root of this triple challenge. Now, if there's anything that should be at the top of the civil society requirement, should be to address this poverty, unemployment, and inequalities. But that way cannot succeed without addressing the land question. Now, if the Land Claims Court is not operating optimally, we are not going anywhere. So our understanding would be that if we agree that this land issue is a priority, and given you have correctly said that you know, the economic situation impact on your work, so we should then say every little cent that we have must be directed to our priorities. And if we agree that the land question is a priority, why don't we change the mandate of the Foundation for Human Rights to say the bulk of the civil society are the dispossessed people, and that dispossession is what can destroy this democracy? Because if we are not able to restitute the land to the people, empower the people to develop the land and be able to feed and dress themselves, then we will not have achieved the objectives of this democracy. So advice centers, paralegals, would be the runners in the implementation of those programs that are directly rooted in the communities. So, for today, I think your understanding of where we, what we are dealing with, it's also our understanding. But I still want to think that we must zoom on this issue of the land question, maybe even agree on a workshop where we bring the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Economic Development, the Department of Environmental Affairs, and also the Department of Traditional Affairs. Because the bad thing about the land is that in traditional communities, land is also related to religion. You have heritage sites. You find that these municipalities run by young people who have been alienated from their people's traditions. Just see Lake Kunduzi in Venda and say we want to put a hotel there because it will bring tourists, it will bring money. But that lake is like the Vatican. You can't go and do open a spaza shop in the Vatican. It's a religious place. So understanding of our traditions, the traditions and cultures of our people is part of building a new society. Because if you build a new society in which the people don't buy in, you cannot create a social crisis nation that we all desire. But I think we could leave it there, that let's have this consultative thing with the other departments to get a common understanding of the centrality of the land and agree as to how we move forward. But for today, I think proceed, I guess honorable members will agree that you interpreted the brief correctly, and we should allow you to proceed on that basis.
Thank you, Chairperson. And we will arrange the workshop as guided, and thank you for that. And the issue of advice centers is intertwined to the issues that the Honourable Chair has alluded to, but it's also to a certain extent linked to the earlier discussion that we had on traditional courts as well. Chairperson and Honourable Members, to the extent that the Chair touched on the EU and the Foundation, perhaps let me deal with that very briefly. It's in this document we call Responses Document. And what we've done is, after the meeting that we had here, we went back and we discussed it internally in the department, and we looked at how we were structured and all of that, and how the board, how, what representation did we have in the board. But that's not really the issue that I'd like to discuss, but we have sorted that aspect out as well. But the issue I really wanted to update the Honourable House on is the fact that the meeting that the Chairperson had requested, we would like to facilitate that meeting with the board so that the conversations that the Chairperson is having or wishes to have with the board can be heard almost immediately, so that we can then agree on how we move forward in remandating, so to speak, the foundation. What we wouldn't want to create an impression of, we wouldn't want to create an impression that we are unhappy with the work that the foundation is doing. We would want to redirect, so to speak, the work of the foundation. So in this web draft document, you will see that we are seeking a date from this Honourable House so that we can facilitate that meeting from secretariat to secretariat, so that that conversation can happen almost immediately. So that at least if the conversation happens, then perhaps firstly this Honourable House will be informed in a comprehensive manner on the work and made the choices with a great deal of knowledge on what drove the current program. And if we then conclude that we move those current programs to something new, then at least we can do that with that knowledge. We are happy to facilitate that meeting anytime, obviously depending on the diaries of this Honorable House as well as the Foundation. But it's not that the Foundation is sacrosanct or sacred or anything like that. And I just like, I would like to conclude on those basis.
Why don't you liaise with my office and the foundation so that we get a date as soon as possible. But I want to agree with you that the basis is not dissatisfaction with what the foundation is doing. It's really to say, let's relook at what is happening and see if there's not need to shift the focus in one way or another. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, then in the yesterday's meeting, Chairperson mentioned that we are working on the hate crimes draft bill, and the real issue is not that, because those are symptoms. We should be working on the criminalization of racism. So Chairperson, the draft that is before you in terms of the schedule and the timeline is the draft that still talks to the issue of the bill and the policy instrument around the prevention and combating of hate crime as well as hate speech. But it's not in its entirety the way I understand the work that we have put in the talking wholeheartedly, so to speak, on the criminalization of racism. So what we will need to go back and do is, in part, continue with the work that we have already done, but perhaps then have that broader conversation as has arisen yesterday as to what more, if anything, do we need to put here to crystallize the conversation that we are now criminalizing the racism, because you would recall, Chairperson, that PEPUDA was intended to make us, all of us, hug and like each other without criminalizing our conduct, because we thought it would be a social norm. We thought the principles of Ubuntu would kick in and therefore we will embrace each other genuinely. But clearly, PEPUDA has not gone as far enough to help us to change on our own, and we would need to then look at how do we criminalize racism. So it's not that we misunderstood the brief in the first place. We understood the brief and we went and did that. But we, with this new element, but which is very fundamental, it would require that this work be tailored somewhat differently, and please allow us then to go and do that. In the
we should be happy with that. I was just wondering, anti-Semitism, for instance. I guess it's a crime even outside Israel. That we could look at those kind of legislation, because it's deeper. And then we could have something along the same lines of anti-racism and anti-Semitism. But I think your explanation covers us.
Then on the National Action Plan to Combat Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia and Related Intolerances, Chairperson, the work is there in the public domain. We are in the heart and the thick of things in relation to the consultative processes where we are consulting on the document. When we were here last, we said the document was going to be finalized and it would go to cabinet, and all of that has happened. It has been published. We are popularizing it out there in the media, in communities, in the general South African populace. So as a result of that, we have the timelines, which we believe are quite tight, because the last comments are expected in June, on the 30th of June, and then we are giving ourselves literally only 2 months to finalize, synthesize the comments, and then reproduce, so to speak, the documents with all the comments that we would have received, and then be able to go to cabinet and then bring the document to this honorable house. I must, however, Chair, indicate that having led that process up to this point, we various sectors have shown significant interest, and now it's not good to celebrate something wrong, but what happened in December helped us, because otherwise every time we spoke about the NAP, people said, there we go again, government is harping on issues of racism instead of us moving forward. Now, the December incident assisted us, because now people realize that we need to address this issue of racism. So I think the NAP is now falling into a more fertile ground, as opposed to if we had come up with this document probably few months earlier than December. So that work is going to happen. We are hoping to end up with a big conference around September, on the 30th of September, where we then bring everybody in society to say, this is now your document, because it's a country document. Every sector that has participated is working on its comments, so that we can get to that workshop and we can get to that final document that we can deposit after that, first with cabinet and parliament, and then deposit with the UN. So we are cautiously happy with where we are, but we are very cautious, because issues of racism are very deep in our country, and it's going to take a while before we can finalize all of them.
Just DG, on your popularization, maybe that is our fault. You see, I was very impressed. I was present when you presented that document at the Human Rights Conference recently. But I think what is missing, if that document could be made available to members of parliament, maybe also with an executive summary, then all parties represented in parliament then would take this document to their PCO's constituency and have a conversation with the community. That would help you, because as the department that is just a national department, it should be difficult for you to produce this good work and take it to the people broadly. So if you could find a way that we get the documents, all political parties in parliament must have it, we have an executive summary, and then as parliament, then we can take this to all the constituency offices in the country, get the dialogues running there. I think that would make life easy for you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Appreciate it. We will do that. We will provide the document almost immediately, and then we will work on the executive summary. I think there is already an executive summary, but what we might want to do is to enhance it with all the consultations that we have had so far, and then bring it to Parliament as well. But yeah, we will do that, and we appreciate that. We can use every avenue of getting support that is available to us. Then the issue of the indigenous languages, Chairperson, we've done a lot of work in terms of engagement with what we believe are correct structures, starting with the Department of Higher Education and Training, but also within ourselves in the department with the legal profession to a certain extent. We haven't canvassed them fully, but at least we have started. And obviously we maintain a representation in the steering committee that deals with the work of determining the curriculum of LLB. And so those conversations have started, as I indicated. So what we are now doing is we are providing you with a plan of where do we think we are going to be by period X. and all of that is the biggest number of dependencies are what is happening right now in terms of developing the language itself, ensuring that universities lead that process so that it happens across the board. Some universities are quite advanced, I must say, the UKZN is quite advanced in this area of work, and as I indicated previously, some materials even have been produced that can be replicated countrywide, but some universities are quite behind, if I may put it that way. So for us to be able to do a meaningful consultative process is to then take all of the issues that the Chairperson raised yesterday and a previous round and have a good sit down of a number of iterative processes between ourselves and the Department of Higher Education, because as you know, for us to have access to universities, we have to go through the Department of Higher Education. We must sell this thing to them. They must understand it. They must know it theirs, because they are responsible for that sector, for the planning of the work that goes into that sector and all related activities. And we are grateful to the department, though, because they've come to understand. But I don't think we've given them sufficient information and perhaps made a compelling case to them at this point to change all their planned curriculum activities for universities. And that's what we need to do, is to get there so that they are able to do the planning for the balance of the period. We are hoping to then come back with a final report to this Honorable House on or around August 2016, which will tell you what are they saying, how do they think they will be able to do that. So that is the one aspect, which is at an interdepartmental as well as intersectoral level. But
on that aspect, you know, at the University of Pretoria, language has already become an issue. And despite the fact that Afrikaans is one of the official languages, you have other students saying Afrikaans must be abolished, which would be a violation of the constitution and linguistic rights of others. And that would be a source of conflict in society, and really make the creation of a socially cohesive country very difficult, which means that we cannot protract the finding of a solution to the language question and get our students to understand that this country belongs to all the people, and that goes with the rights of all the people. So that's why I would not really believe that you should also be held hostage by the Department of Higher Education, because there is the autonomy of the universities. They may also be having limitations, because the universities will say we are autonomous. So even maybe in that case, we could organize a workshop as legislators. We say this matter is a priority. We get a workshop with art and culture, justice, and then higher education, and start to prioritize the things that can divide society, especially if that happens to young people. It will not be. So let's try and speed that up and have this consultation. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I guess that's why you're so we will do that, sir. But I also wanted to indicate that there's just so that you understand the impact of this. Can you give me the slide on this issue of language is a very big issue, and we take it as such. But I really wanted to bring to the attention of this Honorable House, how do the numbers look? And I don't mean to intimidate or to change the conversation from where we are. In the current dissertation, without languages being prioritized in the manner that is suggested, which is correct and I fully subscribe to. If you look at the cost of what we pay for foreign languages, you can see that we are running at 56 million, probably 57, I mean, sorry, 57 million per period, say per annum. And then for local languages, for all the translations or the interpreting in court, we are paying 400 million. And then the total is that amount. And then, of course, there are attended costs which you pay, like your travels to move.
Which are these foreign languages?
All foreign languages, if people are appearing in our courts, like your Chinese, Swahili, Igbo, and especially Igbo is used very extensively in our courts, especially in Johannesburg and Cape Town, and the like. Now, the reality of the matter, Chair, is that we are spending almost half a billion rand today already. So that is one aspect that we should all take into account. So one of the things that when we start using the language of record, any of the official languages as the language of record, this perhaps the middle column can potentially reduce, potentially, but it has its own implications, because it won't reduce next year or the following year. You will have to do something for it to reduce first. So there's that implication that realistically we are looking at. The second implication is that currently I work in Gauteng. I am of a Zulu origin and heritage, and I work in Gauteng, and I can work anywhere in South Africa, hopefully continue to work anywhere in South Africa. But in the absence of having everybody trained, we also do not want to then push anyone who wants to work anywhere to go and work in a particular place only because we want to save costs in this area. So what we have been doing is to try and create a balance to ensure that people are free to ply their trade anywhere in the country based on the constitution, but also ensuring that we train sufficient people to be anywhere in the country to provide the services that we are talking about. So what am I saying, therefore? I am saying administratively, because it's not a political issue, but it becomes a political issue when you have to allocate money. Because for this work, we are going to need a lot of resources. That's what I'm appealing to. I'm saying before you change that, you're going to have to give us a lot of money to ensure that people are trained. Because if it were up to us, we would then take a pool of funds and give it to higher education and say, for this money, we want you to go and train so many people over how long a period, so that we can have all the official languages being utilized and train specifically for our courts. I understand that they must do that for everything else, but for our courts, we would need that. And so we have that need as the department, and we are desperate to get more money, and we are looking to you to give us the resources to put us to a stage. Otherwise, if we are not put in that stage, it's going to take a lot longer to get every language being readily available without having to physically move all the Zulus to Zululand. Okay, so that's the point I'm trying to raise. So if we could be assisted in that request, we would truly appreciate it. Thank you, Chen.
Case well made.
I've passed the indigenous language, because all of the things are said in that context. And in in this document, the small presentation. Then we move to the next issue, Chairperson, which is the transformation, a framework on the transformation of the magistrates' court and the lower courts. Chairperson, the minister covered this somewhat substantively yesterday, but we have provided a plan, a very detailed plan here, and this plan has to be delivered, Chairperson, by Advocates Hosanna and Ms. Pillay. They will have to share that responsibility. We believe it's doable, Chairperson. We believe there are areas that are seriously contested right now, but we believe there is a drive and there's a need for us to clarify this sooner than later as the government of the Republic of South Africa. So the plan, I'm not going to go through the detail. Chairperson, on the community courts, there was at some point research that was done by the Law Reform Commission, but I think it was abandoned without proper communication between ourselves and the Law Reform Commission. And it's not that they have to shoulder the blame. I think we have to shoulder the blame because we did not monitor closely as to what was happening there. So we take full responsibility for our error, Chair, there. However, we are now saying, let's look at how far they went and how much more they need to do. So based on this, we are providing that plan so that they can conclude that work on the community court. So that, because the reason for the research in part is we needed to tell us few things for planning purposes so that we can plan on how we resource those areas that we want to re-establish, so to speak. Community courts in some areas already existed. But Chair must also indicate that theoretically some are still there, but practically they have been subsumed by the normal legal system, so they don't operate as community courts as they were envisaged originally. So in theory they are there, but in practice they operate slightly differently than being community courts.
That's where the problem is. That subsumption into the normal system then Europeanized the system and imported different value system. And that's why you find people starting to debate things like, is it court or is it forum? Which is unnecessary because in any legislation you give definitions. If you say it's community courts, you'll deal with the definition and so on. But to start saying it's a forum and things like that, then you want to elevate other courts above that one and we are back into difficulties. But I'm happy that you have picked that up. To take it for.
Thank you, Chair. This responsibility lies, the next one, that is, lies under Advocate Hosanna as well as Ms. Pillay. And this is on alternative court administration. This is on the end state of the judiciary. So this work, I think various consultations have happened between ourselves and the OCJ and between Advocates Hosanna, the minister in the judiciary. So various consultations have happened between the executive and the judiciary. So we are hoping that we are at the drafting process level. The draft policy document, version of the policy document we looked at in September and much later than September with all the comments, so it shouldn't take much longer now, at least the base document, based on which then legislation will have to be developed. But as all of this work is happening, Chair, we are also learning. It's a big learning curve for us. And so even though we are committing to these dates, the conversations between us and the OCJ and between us and the judiciary are really very fragile when it comes to how we finalize this work. And this is one area where we are putting dates, but we are nervous about the dates we are putting. But we are putting them so that at least they guide us very quickly in getting to or forcing those who must make decisions in these areas to be able to make those decisions. So the timetable, Chair, is there for the Honourable House to also hold us accountable for that. Chair, those were the key issues that you had raised as this Honourable House, and we've attempted to respond to them. Now, you may then ask, but where is the money for all of the things that we are going to do, going to come from? Chair, we have not shown the detail in the budget, but the budget, you will see that the budget is contained in the main presentation because statutory speaking or legally speaking, this is what we should be presenting to this Honourable House, the APT and the annual performance plan and the stretch plan for now and the next however many years. So the information on the budget is contained in this document, and we would like, Chair, to be guided on whether we move straight to this document. Oh yes, there were two big questions that were raised yesterday, Chair, which time committing we would wish to talk either in general nature or in specific terms on which I have not covered because they were not in this presentation. It's the issue of the state attorney, what is happening there, black advocates, big briefs, and all capacitation and all related issues. We have the presentation to talk to that, Chairperson. We can be guided whether you would like that now or you would like that later. The second issue that we have or that we should discuss that was raised yesterday is whether just... whether the integrated justice system is a story or not. I think the Chairperson said it almost as a fact and said justice, the IJS system is a story. We would like to correct the Chairperson.
Okay.
It is not a story. It's one program that we have swung around so much that it's no longer a story. There was a point though, so even though I was hurting sitting at the corner when the chair said that, but I understood why the Chairperson said that. So it's that part that we would like to put before this Honourable House so that you know that it's not necessarily a story. That certain things have not come together is no lack of attention or activity on how we are running this process. But it's the one element that was missing the most, which was correctional services. We've moved them around.
Maybe let's pack those two things and come to the main document. Honourable members, would that be okay? Because we raised the question of integrated justice system, the state attorney, and then we'll deal with that so that we don't derail you too much, and then if we focus on that.
May I give the presentation to my colleague Lebo Mphahlele Ntsasa to take you through? She seemed to have outskilled me in doing the presentation to this Honourable House, so may I give it to her?
That's fine, except that my bosses said we are breaking at 12:30. So.
Okay.
It's fine. Yeah, so proceed. Okay. I'm also directed that we'll give you 20 minutes to present and then 10 minutes for discussion.
Thanks, Chair. We have about 70 slides, but we need 20
minutes. Sorry, no, I have so many bosses. I'm hearing that we are coming back at 2:30. So maybe the discussion will be at that point. Now take your time.
Okay. So on slide, or let me just take you through to the contents. On slide number two, we detail the contents of the presentation, and we will deal with the mandate, the mission and the vision, key values, priorities, strategic goals, policy-related initiatives. Very important, what the changes are in the current APP. We have a budget overview in there, and then you can get into the programs, and finally finalize with the risks and conclusions. So this is just to explain that the annual performance plan that you've put together has been put together following consultations within the department between the 15th and the 17th of July in 2015, and we held a subsequent one from the 11th to the 12th of November. And in the one for the 15th to the 17th, we even included key stakeholders from the JCPS. There was DCS, Correctional Services was there, NPA, the OCJ was involved, and the Legal Aid of South Africa. And during those sessions, we did look into, or we have taken guidance from the executive, from the DG, and we looked at our mission and vision, priorities of the department. We looked at the indicators and their alignment to the NDP, and those resolutions were taken into account when we finalized the APP. So in short, it was a consulted APP. The constitutional mandates of the department remain what they have always been. Even with the movement of the OCJ, our department must support justice services. So we continue with that, and we continue to give administrative support where it's needed within the judiciary, and partly also with the OCJ, there are some services that we still share. So our constitutional mandate chair hasn't changed following the 17th Amendment and following the Social Cost Act. We still play the supportive function in the justice system. I'm not going to go through the legislation, Chair. It's what we always have in our presentations. We must mention what our legislative mandates are, and they include working within the court. Like I already said, we support all the courts through the legislation shown on slide number 5, and also on the legislation shown on slide number 6. And slide number 7 is also standard in our presentation, and also legislation mentioned under slide number 8. The mission and the vision share on slide number 9, they remain an accessible justice system that promotes constitutional values, and the mission is to provide transparent, responsive, and accountable justice services. And also the values remain unchanged share under slide number 10. The priorities of the department, from the administrative point of view, good governance and in administration is critical. If we don't have that, then the people don't trust what we tell them and what we say we did. So it remains a priority that all our books must be found to be clean. The second one is that the turnaround within the state attorney, and that's what we already indicated, Chair, that we would give some background on that. State turnaround in maintenance services remain with the good progress that we have been making in the maintenance services. We will go on and show that we are intending to get better at maintenance services, not just on the payment side, but also from the application side as well. Youth employment opportunities is very critical for our country, as you all know, to ensure that we create youth employment opportunities, and we will ensure that happens. So the goals of the department, we have the four strategic goals. The first one, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented administration. That is linked to outcome 12 of the NDP. And all in all, on the administrative side, we have an amount allocated to the value of 177.8 million. Our second goal, improved administrative support to the justice system, enabling efficient resolution of cases, and that's where we support all the civil, family, and criminal cases And this is aligned to outcome 3 and 13 around keeping our running it in administration and keeping our community safe. An amount of 78.5 million has been allocated for the 2016-17 financial year. Moving to goal number 3, provision of quality legal services that strengthen capacity of the state. This is linked to outcome 12 of governance and administration. And the major focus under this goal talks about building capacity within the legal services or the state attorneys in particular. And we have invested an additional, or we have planned to spend an additional 36 million for 2016-17. All in all, for that goal is 118.6 million. The fourth goal is promote constitutionalism and social justice to contribute to social cohesion. Outcome number 14 on social cohesion in the NDP, an amount of 76 million has been allocated. The legal, on the issue of policies and related initiatives, I will not touch on those that the DG has gone to detail with. I'll touch on those that we haven't touched since the beginning of the meeting. From the legal practice point, the legal practice act point of view, the focus then for 2016 will be on the finalization of the legal practice council and structures. And so we are glad that there is progress in here, and we have been reporting it in our quarterly reports, and the reports, the quarterly reports have also been put together. So we are happy with the progress that we see in the Legal Practice Act. And the amount of budget that we've put together to ensure that work happens in line with the Act, in 2017 we have 17 million that has been budgeted for. 2017-18 we have 18.4 million and 2018-19 we have 9.3 million. And year-on-year growth is also indicated on the board there. Transformation of state legal services. This is now about the state attorney's chair. The issues that have been identified within the state attorneys are detailed there. We know that we have a problem with prescriptions of claims, we have default judgment issues, lack of monitoring systems for the work of the state attorneys, inconsistencies in determining counsel fees, and those types of things. So those are the issues that we have identified and that we are trying to address. So far, in 2015-16, we have developed policies, draft policies, that will take us forward. There's a policy on briefing counsel and a fee parameter, and there's a framework of the management of state litigation. There's also a policy for state legal representation and policy on mediation. These are the policies that we have drafted, Chair, that we intend to then take out on a consultative process. In fact, the consultative process has started already in addressing the transformation within the state attorney. I must also mention, Chair, that a question was asked about the 80 people that we have so far appointed. Yes, we have appointed legal capacity within the state attorney environment, but I must stress that we are now in the process of appointing the seniors that would ensure that all the juniors that we have appointed are well supervised. So this was the piece that we are missing. So work has happened, improvements are underway, and we are glad that we now will be able to appoint seniors in this environment. This now continues on the state transformation of state legal services. Okay, I think I have touched on this. If you need to touch on this. So how much money then will be put up under this program? For 2016-17, we have budgeted 4.6 million. For 2017-18, we budgeted 4.9 million. And 2018-19, we have budgeted 5.2 million. Alternative judicial administration framework, this we've touched on. And that's number C. Number D, policy framework on on rulemaking is also in process. We expect that this year, this financial year, progress would be made in ensuring that we move the speed around rulemaking. Chair, I thought we must then touch on the changes that have been made. We dealing with the ACP in 2015-16. Now, what is different in ACP in 2017? We thought it would be better if we highlight it in our presentation. The first major change that we see is under Objective 5, the objective on improved finalization of criminal cases in support of Outcome 3, or people in South Africa are in full safe. The objective itself remains what it is. The indicator, how do we know that we are improving finalization, is when the number of cases on the backlog will decrease. So that indicator still stays. But on the output, on what people do on a daily basis, we have adjusted slightly. The senior certificate business plan that we normally have in our APP will now be changed into the implementation of that business plan. So it's not about the completion of the plan, it's now about whether we are implementing that plan. So you'll see that the indicator has changed as such. Chair, the other major change is we have aligned the indicators from the magistrate courts. We've aligned them with the norms and standards of the judiciary. So we will be putting in case systems to measure those indicators. As you can see in our document, we do not have baselines yet, but these are the baselines that we will be putting in place. But the good thing is, these are the indicators that we will be assisting the judiciary or the magistracy to measure to ensure that they align with our norms and standards. So those are the new indicators. The issue of percentage of criminal cases postponed due to unavailability of court staff, that indicator still stays. So there is a change under Objective 5 change. And under Objective 15, we have included, there's a new requirement, Chair, that all our policies and legislation must go through SAS impact assessment. We have made capacity available within the department to ensure that that will continue, and so we have added an indicator under 15.4. Otherwise, the rest of the objective stays the same. Now, moving on to Objective 16, promotion of broad-based knowledge about and support for values of equality, human dignity, and fundamental human rights. Chair, this is the work that we do through the Foundation for Human Rights. And there we decided with the Foundation for Human Rights, but the indicators that we put up, we don't want to measure activities as is shown on the second column there, but that we want to measure output. So we have changed the indicator. You will notice that the indicators have changed from where they were last year to the new year, and they are indicated on the board. Moving to Objective 20, establishment of an integrated electronic criminal justice system to modernize the management of the criminal justice system. We have changed the wording of that objective. It's now functional integrated electronic criminal justice system to monitor the performance of the criminal justice system established. I guess is the wording that has changed. The indicator how we know that we are doing that it remains unchanged. The output indicators, we have included two more indicators that says what we as a department will be doing to ensure that we support the work of the IJS. What is it that the department must do? So we have strengthened that work within the department with additional indicators. Moving to Objective 9, increased level of compliance with quasi-judicial standards of service, that remains unchanged as an objective. Now, the objective indicator, we have noted that quasi-judicial standards of services are not always complied with. And in fact, we want to ensure that in our improvements, we ensure compliance around quasi-judicial services that are done within our courts. So we have changed that objective, otherwise the indicator stays the same. Yes. All right, just to clarify what those services are, we talking about taxation, and we also talk about default judgment. So those are the services that we are talking about. Thank you. And under Objective 10, The third objective remains the same: increased efficiency in the provision of master services to all beneficiaries. That stays the same, is the objective that has changed. So we have moved it beyond just people accessing the website. We say now we want to know how many cases we have handled within the master of the High Court. The output indicators and the whole list of them, they remain unchanged. And under objective 11, this is on litigation. The new indicator there is improved management of litigation on behalf of the state to transform the state legal profession. And the objective indicator, the percentage reduction in litigation costs against the state. Now, Chair, this is where another a question was raised by members that the way we measure the state attorneys is not an effective measure. And we have responded in that document that we are putting new systems, new case management systems within the Office of the State Attorney. That system will allow us, will enable us to get all the key measures around performance of the state attorney, and we will be able to then craft much better indicators around this work. We do understand that it's critical, and it's in fact is one of our key priorities for the department. And with a better system that will capture the work as it goes on, we will be able to then assess how well we are doing within the state attorney environment. We have another addition or a change within our ATP is this ATP includes the objectives from the NPA. In the past we didn't have that, but with the understanding that the NPA Act was not finalized, the NPA remains a program within the department, and so we ensure that those objectives from the NPA are included in our department. And those are the three objectives that were there that are now part of ours. So moving on to the budget side, we would like to indicate on slide number 28 that we have had budget cuts. Before we were given 18.2 million for 2016-17, it has now been reduced to 18.0 for the year. So the budget cut that has been announced, there's no major impact in the 2016-17 financial year. However, if you look into the 2017-18 financial year, the budget is even bigger, because in 2016-17 we were cut by only 123 million, but now in 2017-18 it's 554 million, and 2018-19 we've been cut by 804 million. So the budget cut issues are going to get worse going into the 2017-18 to the 2018-19 financial year. And due to the current, I'm now on slide 29. We have received a below inflation increased budget as we have shown, and I've indicated that we have lost 114 million, and that mostly came under auxiliary and associated service providers. This is where the IJS resides. So the 114 million mostly was cut from the IJS area, and as a department we have tried to reorganize our budget to ensure that the IJS program continues, because it's one of the most critical areas of performance for the justice system. So we have reprioritized within our own baseline to ensure that the IJS program continues. Indicative budget allocations per program are on the board. Program one under administration, we start off with 2 million in 2 billion, sorry, in 2016-17, and it only ends up with 2.2 billion in 2018-19. That's how the growth will be. And perhaps let me not go through the detail of the slide. There are other slides that indicate this on the graph, on a graph. So we want to make you aware that we have come to this house and said, yes, our budget under people or staff or what you call the line. Our compensation of employees has been growing, and in fact it's shown on the graph under the slide there. And we are working towards ensuring that we have that growth. And we are working hard to ensure that that growth in administration reduces to ensure that where there is a need to grow, people, it should rather be in our service delivery environment. And then we have also illustrated with this graph that the state attorneys are the ones that have shown very little growth, and they are underfunded, and that is why in our priorities we mention how we increase funding within the state attorney environment. Other departmental priorities within the data, the baseline, property management will grow for 2016-17 from 1.1 billion to 1.3 billion. Capital works from 900,000 to 1 billion. 900 million to 1 billion. The security, 92 million to 102 million, and IJS from 389 million in 2016-17 to 468 million in 2018-19. So what is the implication on the budget? What are the issues that we have? The first one, improvement in conditions of service for 2015-16 was higher than the provision in the estimate. The carry-through cost in this regard is higher than the kept amount in 2018-19. So we see that the improved conditions of service coming through our negotiations with the unions have an impact on our budget. The department is in the process of reviewing its service delivery model first to ensure that services at court level are not compromised. We review how we structure work, how we allocate work, how we allocate posts as well to check that if two or three people can, instead of being specific around administrative work, we should rather have an administration person dealing with a number of issues within the court. So we do try to introduce measures such as that to ensure that we live within our means in a difficult budget environment. And I've already indicated that the IJS project was cut by 114 million and that we are working within our own baseline to ensure that program continues. Areas of spending pressure for the 2016 financial year, 2016-17, it remains security infrastructure. Perhaps let me take you through what the shortfalls are in security. We thought this slide might be of interest. Currently, the security guarding services, we have a budget of 782 million. For 735 offices. It's not in your pack, but I'll talk through. We have a budget allocation of 782 million for 735 offices. There are offices under C. We show that there are 155 offices or sites that are currently not guarded at all. And that is a major, major risk for us if we have mixed-space offices that are not currently guarded. Under D, I show there that there's total amount spent on guarding services, including special protection services, for the contracted period is 1.1 billion. And that's just from September 2013 to September 2016. So it is estimated that the new guarding services for 36 months will require an additional amount of about 384 million. There is a delay. I also want to mention that the reason why costs are going up as well is because the cost of the security guard has gone up. This is due to the statutory wage increases that have been put up by the security industry. So that has really crippled our work under the security budget. So in short, we continue to be underfunded on the security side, and we know the risks of not securing our offices, because we have seen that there has been escapes. There are all sorts of problems within that environment if we are not well guarded. So it's something that we must raise strongly within the portfolio committee. Other failures of understanding of spending pressures, the paralegals, we would like to include more paralegals. As we have already indicated, we did a pilot. We need to now start implementing the budget pressures there. And as well, we want to introduce mediators according to our draft rule on mediation. The pressure there. Small business code re-engineering program under 5, technical capacity within the department to fast track projects to be implemented by the Department of Public Works. This is under our build and maintenance program. And finally, the rollout of the Office of the Protection of Personal Information Regulator. We have gone ahead and assisted this house with a process to appoint the information regulator, but that office would need to have more capacity going forward. And now getting into the program side, Chair. Program 1, we have 4 objectives there. The first one is increase compliance with CISPIS to achieve and sustain the unqualified audit opinion. Second one is implementation of programs aimed at supporting employment opportunities for youth. The third is reduction of fraud and corruption cases in the department. And the fourth is increased number of public bodies compliant with the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Under this program, Chair, we just came to mention that this is aligned with Chapter 13 called Building a Capable State within the National Development Plan, and that as a department, we have achieved an unqualified audit opinion for the vote account, and we are very proud about that. And similarly, we have achieved that for the Guardian Fund and the President's Fund. We are still working very hard to ensure that the third-party funds also achieve an unqualified audit opinion. And our plan, Chair, is that we will get that by the year 2017-18. Not 2016-17, but by 2017-18, we should get that. At the moment, we're putting measures in place to ensure that we get there. The new TPS system has been implemented. The implementation has started with a number of courts, and it will continue for the rest of the year. And that system will assist us to manage our financials better within the third-party systems within our courts. So we are very hopeful that we should be able to turn that around by 2017, as indicated. Under Objective 2, implementation of programs to support youth programs. Within this structure, Chair, we are going to provide learnership opportunities to 2,550 youth, and mostly in the area of law, IT, and public management. So we have put that in our plans. But over and above supplying learnership and internship opportunities, we want to ensure that a portion of the money we spend via procurement supports youth employment as well. We have been wrestling with the issue of how to bring this thing legally into the department and what mechanisms we can use to ensure that we do give opportunities to the youth. Some progress has been made, but we will probably be able to finalize the baseline work on 2016-17. But I must report that we have piloted that. We have piloted it with a number of tenders that went out, and it is promising that we will be able to do this work. But yes, it's still a major area of focus. We really would put a lot of effort in ensuring that we do promote youth employment. Reduction of fraud and corruption within the department. The department will continue to run with our program on awareness. We have set targets for awareness as usual. We have set targets for vetting of senior managers as well as, and on top of vetting senior managers, we also vet supply chain officials, so that will continue, and we'll also ensure that where there has been fraud or corruption done, there's still finalization of forensic investigation. That is the approach that we've always held in the department, and it has worked well. Objective 4, Chair, under PAIA, we will continue to ensure that we educate and capacitate departments and other state entities around the issue of Bahia. As a department, we lead on that, and we have set targets to ensure that we continue to train. And secondly, we will continue to ensure that from our own Bahia request that we comply with the legislation. And I must report that since we started taking this indicator, we have seen major improvements in the compliance, and we will continue to take that work in the 2017 APP. Moving on to program number two, under port services, slide number 42 mentions the key objectives. The first one is improve finalization of criminal cases in support of outcome three. The second is provide improved court-based services to achieve client satisfaction within vulnerable groups. Number three, increase protection of the best interest of the child and promoting family cohesion through mediation services. Number four, increase access to justice services to historical marginalized communities. And five, improve level of compliance with quality judicial standards of service. There again, Chair, under objective number five, I think I've talked in detail around this objective and the fact that we are introducing norms and standards that are aligned to the judiciary. We don't need to include that. Under objective six in vulnerable groups, Chair, here we will continue safely with our program to study sexual offences court. And we are going to have 30 additional sexual offences courts over the MTES period. So over the next 3 years, we plan to have 30 additional sexual offences courts. The second one that is worth mentioning is that we ran a maintenance turnaround program on non-pilot sites. Those sites we are now going to extend. Then there are no longer 9 that we're monitoring. We will be monitoring 90 sites, 90 of our biggest sites, to ensure that maintenance turnaround times, particularly on orders, it's not just payments and orders are done in line with our service delivery indicators. We will continue with the cleansing of the historical data of the National Register of Sexual Offences because of the importance of the police to the safety of our children. So that work will continue. Slide number 45.
Before we go to slide number 45, I was told 7 minutes ago that we are left with 7 minutes. So shouldn't we break at this stage and allow the honorable members to walk to their next meeting and give you enough time to relax and have lunch, then we meet at our first. Are we happy with that suggestion?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you very much to you then.